And hello again. Welcome to another edition of the Mountain View Podcast. It is June 6th, Sunday, joined by...
Am I here?
You're here. Todd's here.
Yeah, Todd Reynolds.
I'm Stephen Trammell. Thanks for tuning in. I've always appreciated the three people that listen, and last week we added a fourth. I got a text, well, he texted you too, from Tyler Davidson, and it was very encouraging, where he just said, hey, thanks, and I enjoy the edification. And so, like a good podcaster, this is what I said. I'm desperate for topics. Can you help me out here?
I think it was along the lines of, like, thank you for your encouragement. You've now won first prize, which is you have to pick the next topic.
Yeah, and so he's like, let me think it over and I'll get back to you. And less than 10 minutes later, oh, I've got one. So he says he was reading through Judges, came across Judges 11, and that's the chapter with Jephthah and Jephthah's rash vows, what we call it, and sacrifice of his daughter. He said it hit him hard. He said, now he has kids. You know, that hurts more to think about than before I had kids. But here's the best part. He's like, I don't have a question or anything, so I'm not even sure I can talk about it.
I don't really know what you're going to say.
Maybe something about vows. He's like, I'm not sure, but I trust y'all to come up with something good. Well, Tyler, we hate to disappoint you, but the topic needs to include what you want us to talk about, not just the chapter. But
a little bit of content, a couple of points.
It's such a great chapter, just in general. It's one of those things that we would never do in our lives, and so when you're reading the Bible, I mean, it's just all... Everything about it is just this foreign concept, but worth digging into, and we're going to try to take it in a good direction, Tyler, that will help us all to appreciate maybe a little bit more about the story, but then take it in another direction where, man, when you think about the commitment it took for Jephthah to make that vow to God,
right?
Man, we don't even do that either, and then the consequence of that, the sacrifice involved... You kind of put your money where your mouth is, like, who do I love most in this life? And God asks it to be him every time.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And then, you know, what made it so difficult is that love that we have for our children that's just different than any other love. You know, so we can dig into that a little bit too. It's the way that God constructed in life for us to instantaneously get a glimpse of his love for us.
Yeah, so a lot to talk about, and appreciate you joining us for the podcast. And Todd, we probably should just start talking about Jephthah just a little bit. I know a lot of people may be familiar with it, may need a little bit of a refresher, but Jephthah was a...
He was a valiant warrior, it says right there at the beginning, but he was also an illegitimate child. So he didn't fit in with the heirs of his father and mother.
It says that he was the son of a harlot.
Right.
And when you say illegitimate child, I mean, let's be honest, like, this guy fathered a child with a prostitute.
Yeah, yeah. And we can call it what it is.
And so, talking about family strife, back then, where it's like, you know, the child is going to share in the inheritance of the father, well, it says when his wife's sons grew up, they drove him out.
Yeah.
And said, you're not really going to have anything from our father, for you're the son of another woman. And so Jephthah does what a lot of people do. And if you're kicked out of your home, it says you're going to surround yourself with worthless fellows.
Yeah.
That's what he did. But he kind of became a recognized warrior, like you said. Like, he was a fighter.
Yeah. And, you know, later on in the story, there's trouble with the Ammonites that are coming to, you know, fight, and military conflict is on the horizon. And then all of a sudden, I think, what do we just read here? The men of Gilead, is that right?
Yeah, and that was where he came from.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, his...
He was in Tob or whatever that
is. His family people come back to him and say, we hear you kind of got some chops here.
We might have been a little hasty in kicking you out of the city, out of the family, because you're one bad dude, and you can help us whip these guys that are coming against us.
Yeah, and so, you know, his comment back to them is, well, what's in it for me?
Yeah, well, why are you coming to me now? I mean, you obviously didn't think I was much of anything when you kicked me out.
What am I going to get out of doing this? Like, yeah. Why would I go to battle for you?
Right.
And he uses an opportunity to kind of get back to where he was. He said, are you going to view me as a leader? You're going to view me as the head,
the man guy
in charge?
The presidente.
And they said, okay. And so Jephthah does what Jephthah does, and, well, things kind of work out a little bit as far as him becoming what is recognized as a judge. It's a weird way to be a judge, right? You think back of Gideon and some of the other ones where God is like coming up, tapping him on the shoulder, saying, I want you to do this. I mean, the story plays out a little bit different than that. But Jephthah somehow, like when you think about him, you think about what happens later on at the end of chapter 11. Like this kind of defines him. Like you might not think of him as a judge. You might not think of him as a good guy. All you think of him as is as like a guy that made a really bad decision.
Right.
And that kind of takes us to his vow. I don't know if you want to bring up any more history stuff or anything else you wanted to point out from the text, but.
No, I think front and center is going to be this vow that he makes. You know, he's heading into battle and, you know, a lot of us, you know, we want to be assured of victory. I mean, it could be a sport competition or whatever that we might have today, but, Jephthah wanted an insurance policy for his victory, and that motive, you know, it's kind of like our struggle at times with trusting God. Like we want to know for sure how it's going to end up, and that I think motivates him to do what he does.
So when it comes to the time for battle, chapter 11 says the Spirit of the Lord comes upon him. He passed through Gilead and Manasseh, and he passed through Mizpah of Gilead. And from Mizpah of Gilead, he went on to the sons of Ammon. So he's going to battle. Jephthah made a vow to the Lord and said, if you will indeed give the sons of Ammon into my hand, then it shall be that whatever comes out of the doors of my house to meet me when I return in peace from the sons of Ammon, it shall be the Lord's, and I will offer it up as a burnt offering.
Yeah, I mean, that just sounds brutal when, I mean, you know, vow something to God, and then you know, we know what that vow ultimately meant. But when he's making the vow, when he says, I will offer it as a burnt offering, it's like, wow, that's...
Well, it tells you where his mind is.
Yeah, because his mind is on some type of animal sacrifice.
Right. And, you know, what happens next is what happens, what you would think would happen. Now, God gives the sons of Ammon into his hands. I mean, it's what happens. And it says he struck them with a very great slaughter, and it names a couple towns, 20 cities. And it says in verse 32, the Lord gave them into his hand. So there's some acknowledgement here, even by the writer, that God was with him.
Right.
And here's the thing we learned from Joshua and Judges. If God's not with you, you're not winning.
Yeah, right.
And if God's with you, why are you worried?
Right.
And so the whole concept of him making a vow in the first place is just maybe slightly weird, because it's almost like Mount Carmel with Elijah. You remember what the other guys did? Like the other guys are like, hey, if we cut ourselves, our God will respond to us. And like, I've got to do all this for my God to care. And our God just cares by default.
Yeah, right. And it's hard for us to have that maturity and that faith, but yeah, it's just who he is.
And so he makes this vow. And of course, after the slaughter, it says he comes to his house at Mizpah, and behold, his daughter was coming out to meet him with tambourines and dancing.
Yeah.
Now, she was his one and only child.
Oh, man.
Besides her, he had no son or daughter, and when he saw her, he tore his clothes and said, alas, my daughter, you brought me very low, and you are among those who trouble me, for I've given my word to the Lord, and I cannot take it back. She said, my father, you've given your word to the Lord. Do to me as you have said, since the Lord has avenged you of your enemies, the sons of Ammon. I mean, let's just stop there. I mean, I don't know. That's just very weird.
It's sobering. You know, she's ready for the victory party. I mean, she's coming out to celebrate, tambourines, dancing. It's a victory and a time of great joy. Is the only reason she's coming out in the manner that she's coming out.
Do you think Jephthah's thinking about this as he's turning the corner for home? I mean, do you think he he's thinking back on his vow. I mean, clearly he knows it's in his mind.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, it's one of those things he may have been so wrapped up in the victory and everybody's just partying and excited. I mean, but it does seem like it would be hard for it not to be on his mind somewhat.
And now, I mean, these days we could just send a text like, I need all family members indoors.
Yeah. Look, I made an I made a vow to God. Can someone send out the pet raccoon?
Yes, something. But he doesn't know. And I mean, God knows.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, did God put it in her heart to take a step out there? I mean, God can do whatever God can do. I don't know how any of that stuff happened, but he recognized instantly he was in some kind of trouble. But before we get into a little bit of the context and application, talk to me about vows in the first place. Like, we don't make a lot of vows outside of a wedding. I mean, weddings are pretty much the only time we would ever say, like, I'm going to make a vow.
Right, right. I mean, I think it's something that was a more common practice in Bible times. I think we see Bible characters making vows, not early and often, but we see a couple of examples of it.
What's your favorite example?
My favorite example?
Mine's got to be Samuel. I mean, like, when you just most common or whatever.
Yeah.
Where Hannah was so desperate to have a child, she's like, if you give me a child, I'm just going to devote him to you. And that would be a difficult thing too, right?
Right.
Even though you could come visit him and talk, I mean, but to give a child up, I mean, that's a real sacrifice.
Yep.
Because that would be like us saying today, Lord, if you will even bless me to have a child, I will give it up for adoption.
Ooh,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, maybe I can keep in touch, but it won't be mine to raise like I would see fit, per se.
Yeah, and not something where you would live daily life with that child until age 18.
And we don't think in our prayers often that we should barter with God.
Right.
Like, God, I don't trust you care about me enough to do this unless I pony up, or, you know,
right.
I can't play right. Unless I ante up. And I don't think that's always true, but I don't think these examples in the Bible, oh, I never let you give your example.
Well, no, I mean, I don't necessarily have one. I mean, I don't know. I think the one with Hannah is a great example. I mean, the Nazarite vow and those who had that, you know, obviously, and Samson is an example of that. I'm not sure he totally had a choice. I mean, he was kind of prophesied by the angel that he was going to be a Nazarite from his birth. So I don't know how many examples we even have to pull from. I mean, I know Paul had the vow in the New Testament that motivated him to get his hair cut in Cenchrea. I was just going to say something about that. Like, to me, it's kind of like fasting, where I do think people in Bible times made vows and kept their vows, and it was part of an intimacy that was between them and God, and not everyone knew about the vow, but it would be something that you would know. And when you kept it, you know, you would know that you had proven faithful in something that probably was at some high cost. Yeah. And that, most of the time when a vow is being made, like, there is some specific thing that it is going to cost you. I mean, like, it's not a vow that's, if it's not, doesn't have some challenge or some difficulty to make good on it, then, you know, I vow I'll give you 3 pennies next Sunday. Like, okay, great.
Well, it's weird. I mean, Leviticus 27, last chapter, gives us various laws about vows. And again, not common stuff
right.
that we would preach about, talk about, or use today. Let me just read you some of these verses. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the people of Israel and say to them, if anyone makes a special vow to the Lord involving the valuation of persons, the valuation of a male from 20 years old up to 60-year-olds shall be 50 shekels of silver, according to the shekel of the sanctuary. If a person's a female, the valuation shall be 30 shekels. If the person is from 5 years old to 20 years old, the valuation should be for a male 20 shekels, and for a female 10 shekels. If someone is too poor to pay the valuation, then he shall be made to stand before the priest, and the priest shall value him, and the priest shall value him according to what the vower can afford. It's weird that you would make a promise involving people, or, you know, and if you can't fulfill some of these things, then what are you going to do? You're going to have to pay for it. Verse 14, when a man dedicates his house as a holy gift to the Lord, the priest shall value as either good or bad, and the priest values it, so it shall stand. And so it talks about in this entire chapter, you know, if you promise God something,
right?
If you devote something to the Lord, if you say, God, I'm going to give you this, you got to make good on it. And right. you're going to have these people looking over your shoulder saying, you promised to give God a house, but this thing right here that you're giving, this is not, this is a bad valuation.
Yeah.
And so it was in a part of their lives enough to where God wanted to talk about it.
Yep.
And the famous verse you mentioned earlier as we were kind of prepping in Ecclesiastes.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like 5:4-5.
Yeah. You want to read that? That's probably helpful.
Yeah. Let me actually get there. Ecclesiastes 5:4. When you make a vow to God, do not be late in paying it, for he takes no delight in fools. Pay what you vow. It is better that you should not vow than that you should vow and not pay.
So I think, again, not that I would recommend people going around and vowing things to the God, like you're bartering to God. But I do think there's something to it, sort of like fasting, where you're acknowledging your unworthiness. You really have nothing to offer God. And right. like there's a seriousness to what you're doing.
Yeah.
That it's almost like you're entering into this covenant with God and this agreement that
right.
is all of a sudden a lot more solemn than like a lot of the RSVPs we get for dinner, right?
I know I said I was going to be there, but I got a better offer.
I may come, I may not.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, if you're like, I vow on my firstborn child's life, I will be there. I mean, that would be weird, but you would think like, I don't know, they're serious about it.
Like, that guy's going to be there 5 minutes early and stay 5 minutes late.
Well, yeah. So that there's something about it. So again, not that God encourages all these vows, but it was clearly part of the religious fabric of what they were doing at yeah. times, because Hannah wasn't chastised for it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would like to say this about making vows and fasting. When you read the language of Ecclesiastes 5:4, it's very similar to the language of Matthew chapter 6. The Bible doesn't command you to make a vow, and the Bible doesn't command fasting, but both in both cases, the Bible assumes that people will do it. He says, when you fast,
right.
here's what you need to do. Pay what you fast. Or when you fast, you know, anoint your head with oil and you know, like brush your teeth, wash your hair, and look like you're presentable and don't look like you're weak and fasting. And here he says, when you make a vow, don't be late in paying it. So the fact that the Holy Spirit and the Word of God records for us like an assumption that people will do it does to me kind of indicate that it's something that would be a practice that, you know, would have some spiritual value in kind of developing a deeper relationship with God.
Yeah. And I think too, when you talk about, you know, making a commitment or making a promise, like a lot of times we don't view those as real meaningful, but if we make a vow or something, or we say that we swear, you know, all of a sudden that takes on greater importance. Jesus really wanted to make sure that there was not this two-faced distinction in our commitments.
Right.
Because they were in a culture of swearing and vowing and things, and it's like, upon the temple, you right. know, I promise to do these things. Jesus just wanted your yes to be yes, your no, no, and live in a life where everything that came out of your mouth was honest and trustworthy, as true as if you had made a vow or a swearing statement.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And if everything you say you treat like a vow, you don't need to make a vow. You just need to make good on your word. There's a verse I want to share. It's in Psalm 15. And Psalm 15 is a text where the psalmist, it's a psalm of David. David says, who is going to abide in the tent of God? And who is going to dwell in the holy hill of God? So he's basically saying, like, who's going to go to heaven? And there's a lot of things that he says. But one thing that he says at the end, near the end of the psalm, he says, he who swears to his own hurt and does not change. And that's someone who makes a vow, and that vow is going to cost them something that's going to be painful or difficult, and that person doesn't change. And that's kind of what I think we see with Jephthah. You know, he took the vow very seriously, and Hannah took her vow very seriously. You know, even Paul, he stopped and got his hair cut in accordance with the vow, whatever that meant. They took it seriously, and if there was some harm that would come to them, and they were tempted to change who they are or what they had vowed, the person who's really going to be with God in the end is someone who swears to his own hurt and doesn't change. And that's even true. Like your marriage is a challenge, and you made this vow. Well, guess what? Don't go back on it, right? Maybe it's going to cost you something because your spouse, you know, could become disabled or have some, you know, terminal illness, you know, long-term disability. You know, people are admired who keep their vow even when it is extremely difficult, but they just don't change.
Right. Yeah, no, it's such a great point. And when you think about Jephthah, we kind of characterize him as a negative guy, right? Jephthah's rash vow or whatever. But guess where Jephthah ends up?
Oh, I know.
Hebrews 11.
I know. I was thinking we'd go there toward the end of the podcast.
Because he's right there.
Yeah.
Time would fail me of people like Jephthah. So here's the positive of what Jephthah said. Him vowing anything to God means one thing. He believed God could do something.
Yeah.
And he acted on faith. And he lived that faith out and followed through on his part. Because if there was any doubt in his mind, maybe God didn't do anything, you know?
Right.
No, but he's like, I made a commitment to God.
Yeah.
Like you have brought me very low because I'm going to follow through on it. Now let's talk for a second here about the vow itself. So we just read that he said he was going to offer whatever came out of his house as a burnt offering. Like you're going to die. I'm going to offer you up in a fire on an altar to the Lord. And if you ask somebody, do you think Jephthah went through with it? Well, it doesn't really say at the end of the text that she was offered as a burnt offering specifically. You know, if you continue to read what happened, her response after this said, let this thing be done for me. But let me be alone 2 months that I may go to the mountains and weep because of my virginity, I and my companions. Then he said, go. And so he sent her away for 2 months and she left with her companions and wept on the mountains because of her virginity. At the end of 2 months, she returned to her father who did to her according to the vow which he had made. And she had no relations with a man. Thus it became a custom in Israel that the daughters of Israel went yearly to commemorate the daughter of Jephthah the Gileadite 4 days in the year.
So what do you do when you make a vow and keeping the vow would actually require you to do something that was an abomination to God? I mean, obviously the idol worship when people offered their children, I mean, it was a sin because it was idol worship, but God always made a provision, even for the firstborn that was to be quote sacrifice to God, they were to be redeemed because God didn't intend for, you know, a child to ever be physically sacrificed, except in the case of Abraham. And then even then there was an exception made by God, even in that case. So what do you do when keeping your vow would require you to do something that was in clear violation to what you think the will of God would be?
So here's what I think. And it's my podcast, so I can say whatever.
Do it.
God doesn't tell us here, but knowing the character of God, knowing what God expects, I would think it would be reasonable for some situation to unfold like it did with Samuel, where her future was at an end. Her life was no longer her own. It was forfeit because of what Jephthah had made, you know, the vow he made, and she had to live some sort of celibate life of service to God that would have been not what she ever wanted to do. I mean, you're in a people where lineage is everything, family is everything, inheritance is everything, and that's not going to happen for her. And so it seems like to me, and again, I don't want to ever do violence to the scripture, but it seems like to me they would have worked out some kind of compromise where you're not committing this abomination, but he's following through on what his commitment was.
Yeah, and I think the phrase, I mean, the way the language is written, it does leave some potential for ambiguity, but the fact that it says, and she had no relations with a man, would point in that direction, right? Some type of celibacy where the life that she would choose to live for herself would include being married, being a wife, being a mother, having children.
And that's a taking, real sacrifice, right?
Yeah, taking her place is a huge sacrifice for her. And I mean, it would be something for, be a huge sacrifice for Jephthah too. Like, he wouldn't have grandchildren. You know, the idea of enlarging his family through a marriage alliance just would not occur. And it would be a challenge for his wife. I mean, I think for his wife, I'm sorry, for his daughter.
Yeah.
But don't you think the fact that it would be difficult for her, that would hurt him? I mean, and that's part of where we want to go, I think, with this podcast, is like, the love that we have for our children is so great and so deep. And I think it's one of the main ways that God teaches us to try to understand his love for us. And he would have hurt just because she hurt. It would have probably been worse for him in some ways.
Yeah, let me go back to the question that you asked and kind of answer it a little more fully. I think it is wrong to continue to move ahead with a vow you made that ends up being an abomination to the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give you an example. There are plenty of people out there today that have made vows to each other to spend the rest of their lives together, but the union that they committed to is an abomination to God. So whether that's homosexual marriages, adulterous marriages, those people have made a commitment, a promise,
mm-hmm.
that they're not going to separate from this person as long as they both shall live. And they can't look at God and say, oh, I know you don't like this union, but I already made a promise that I'd stick with it. And
right.
I gotta keep my promise. Like, at some point, just like we have done a podcast on this in the past, you look at Ezra and some of those things. They made a commitment. Like, we're married to these people, but we're married to people we shouldn't be married to. And so we've got to undo these things.
Right.
And so I think there's precedent for us as Christians to be able to go back on our word if our word is going to lead us into some grievous sin.
Right.
Not personal hurt. Not like, oh, I don't want to give you the money now because I really want the money. I mean, something that really is going to be a sinful thing.
Right.
God would not expect us to do that.
Right.
Think about it this way. If I was a priest to Molech and I made the commitment, I'm going to kill all these children. Well,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know. You shouldn't, right? Once you maybe find the truth or
you
whatever.
Think?
You know, like, I don't think God wants you to go through with it because, well, you made some vows to Molech a long time ago. Not that I know that people did those things. But I think we got some precedent for you breaking those. And I don't think Jephthah's the kind of person that is saying, hey, I can't fulfill the burnt offering part, so let's just call the whole thing a wash. His spirit was still,
yeah, yeah.
I have to do something with you.
Right.
And I intend to do it. And what a great spirit from her to say, you should do it because your word to God is serious.
Yeah, and the Lord has avenged you on your enemies. I mean, it sounds like she's a person of faith, giving God the credit and acknowledging his part in the victory that they're enjoying, and it's definitely a testament to her character, it sounds like.
So let's get to the meat of it then. I mean, what is the lesson we really learn from Jephthah? And it's not, well, we shouldn't vow things, and it's not, we should vow and then fulfill it. What is the whole concept at play here with him, God, and his daughter?
Well, I think when he says, you have brought me very low, he's experiencing something that cuts him extremely deeply, and it only cuts him that deeply because of the degree of love that he has for his child. And I mean, for me, a great lesson there is, and Tyler kind of said it in his text, he's like, man, this kind of hits me hard now that I've got kids. It's like, you can't imagine like loving someone more and maybe not even be capable of loving someone more. And then that just shows you a glimmer of God's love.
Yeah. And, And what God calls us to, and what I think gets Jephthah in the Hall of Faith, is that God is going to demand first place in our lives.
Right.
And sometimes that means even the person we care about the most, our future is in their hands, our relationship with God still trumps that.
Right.
And that is one of the most difficult lessons for a Christian to learn, because we touched on it with marriage, divorce, and remarriage. When you look people that love each other in the eye and say, do you love God more?
Yeah.
I've had more people walk away than not from that discussion.
Right.
And what does that show? I value my relationship with my family more than my relationship with God.
Yeah, right.
There are plenty of people that do that.
Right.
And do you think he's ended up in the Hall of Faith if he was like, no, I can't do that?
Yeah, and no, it's like, I was just kidding about whatever the first thing is. Maybe we'll go with the second.
Right. So I think that reality, that's what I learned from it. God is being put in his right place by this family.
Right.
The father is going to see to this commitment, and the child supports it. This is a godly family.
Right.
I mean, who would value and appreciate commitments you made to God?
Yeah, and as you said a minute ago, when he's included in the Hall of Faith, like, he's in the list with Abraham, right? He's in the list with Moses. He's in the list with, you know, these great giants of the faith. And
Noah.
I was actually thinking, man, it would have helped the podcast, like, it would have helped us tell Tyler what was up if the Hebrew writer just gave us a little more color. Like, the Hebrew writer just puts him in the little short list.
Time would fail. But again,
to talk about Jephthah, but like, there was things that could be said.
I know, but he was going kind of chronologically. And so you're going to run out of time as you're pinning that and you're thinking.
Can you remember that next time you're going long in one of your sermons? Like,
if just time, abbreviate?
Well, no, time could just fail you and you just have to just,
like, just abbreviate.
Cut it off quick.
Okay, well, I won't vow to you that I will do that, but I will consider it.
You could. I mean, you could. It's biblical.
You think about Jephthah being in there. This is it, right? And let's just make the application then as we kind of turn to close. Do you think it's a challenge to love God as much as you love your family? Now, maybe it's harder for a woman sometimes, because I think they just have maybe more natural affection and love for their kids than men. Maybe they just have that bone. But I don't know. I mean, what are your thoughts?
I mean, I definitely think it's a challenge, and it's something that God has constructed a lot of circumstances that we're going to face in life with our families and with our church families and with people that we work with, for us to demonstrate that God is, in fact, number one. But it's definitely an important thing. If you remember the opposite case with Eli in the days of Hannah, God told Eli, you honor your sons more than you honor me. And God was not happy, and it was not going to end well for Eli or for Eli's sons. So, I mean, is it easy? No, I don't think it's easy, but I think examples like Eli teach us, hey, and there's been times when I've dealt with my children where it's like, look, you guys need to know I'm taking this stand for what I believe God expects of me, or what I believe God's word tells me. And I don't want to be Eli in the 21st century.
Right. And Jephthah didn't say, oh God, it's family. Like, yeah, families, right. Family's off limits.
Right.
You can't touch family. And I'm just reminded, you know, God calls us, come out from among them and be separate.
Yeah.
And I'll be your God. A little leaven leavens the whole lump. And the danger of continuing to support immorality among brethren. And we have family that are brethren.
Right.
And we kind of look at those things like, well, I can overlook some of their flaws because they're family.
They're family.
I'd hate to treat my family so harsh.
Right.
I couldn't not invite my family to Thanksgiving. Well, Jephthah's like telling his daughter, you're not ever going to know a man or have children.
Right.
You're not getting married. You're not experiencing love. Your life is forfeit the rest of your life. And we can't even not invite our wayward family member to Thanksgiving because there's going to be some drama.
Yeah, right.
Right? I mean, what are you saying to God here? Like, yeah. I made a vow to you that I'm going to follow you and put you first and love those things. But then when it comes to people in my family, like,
Thanksgiving is more important.
It's a trump card. Like, family for a lot of Christians is a trump card. Like, it trumps God.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember people that are like, I wouldn't show up for service. And I'm like, oh, we miss you. Were you sick? No, I had family come in town.
I was visiting with family. We went to IHOP.
Well, I mean, they were like, well, my family doesn't go to church, so you don't go to church. Well, the Trump card, family's the Trump card.
Yeah.
And family's not the Trump card for Jephthah.
Right.
God was the Trump card.
Right.
And family understood that. And would that our family would understand that my commitment and priority to God is number one. And I've had this conversation with Amelia and the kids that can understand these things.
Right.
That I love them so much. But if they turn their back on God, right, they're going to see real quick that I love God.
Right.
And I pray that doesn't happen, because Satan might say, he that thinks he stands, take ye lest he fall. And we'll see how easy that is for you in a few years.
Right.
And Satan may just sift me like wheat. But I've already planted those seeds in them.
Right.
That I love God more than anybody in this car.
Right.
And I think they need to hear that. Like, they need to know that. Because apparently his daughter got it.
No, he did. And I don't know what that would have been like for Jephthah's wife or his daughter's mother. You know, we're not giving any insight into that, but it would have been a challenge for her, and that could have been something that was difficult for Jephthah in his marriage. But if everyone in the family puts God first, then things end well.
We have to.
And whenever anyone doesn't, like, what if Jephthah's wife was like Job's wife? Well, that would have been another cross for Jephthah to bear. But just like Job, you got to take a stand.
Satan tests us.
Yeah.
And one of the ways Satan tests us, he's going to hit your weak link.
Right.
And for some of you, your weak link is that thing that's most dear to you in this life. And for a lot of us, it's our family.
Yeah. It's our kids, you know, at times, because, you know, we love our kids so much, but they can't be number one.
No, and we can't make provisions for them over the commitments we've made to God, and we can't show them that they're the most important thing. And again, it's heartbreaking to me if you see parents going down this road where it's like, no, my kid's sports are the most important thing.
Yeah.
Like, this is, I want my kid to know, like, I will do anything for you, and we'll cut any corners to make sure you're taken care of. That's not teaching your kids anything.
Right.
Like, what your kids need to know is that your relationship to God is number one.
Right.
And they're a number two, but it's a distant number two.
It's a distant number two. But number two is still pretty good.
That's what I tell Navy. I was like, Navy, you're my second. And two is greater than one. So she tells Amelia that all the time.
Two is better than one, Ecclesiastes 4:9.
Two is better than one. That's what she says. So I know it's hard. And again, look, Satan will test me too. But let's learn from Jephthah, and appreciate Tyler's willingness to float us a topic. It does hit us hard.
Yeah.
But God said, look, if you love father or mother more than me,
you're not worthy.
You're not worthy of me.
Right.
And here's why. Jesus went through with it.
Right.
God and Jesus said, let's concoct the thing that no one in this life would want to do.
Yep.
And I'll go through with it.
Yeah. Because with Abraham, it seems that there was a reprieve here. I think there likely was a reprieve on the burnt offering aspect of it. But for Jesus, there was no reprieve.
No. I mean, and they did that for you. And if God can do that for you, you can do that for him.
Right.
And that's the thing God calls us to do sometimes. And so a great lesson for us to think about. And when you look at your children, again, just love them as much as you possibly can. But love them number two.
Right. But you will. I mean, that's just natural. It's what's not as natural at times is to truly make God number one. That's something we develop over time as our faith gets deeper. But it's got to end up that way. But that's the pathway to happiness and fulfillment.
That's right. Yeah. So a lot of good things from Jephthah tonight. I mean, the seriousness of his relationship to God, that he felt like vowing something, right? That aspect, that depth of that commitment, I think we could learn from.
Mm-hmm.
His faith in God and trust in God that allowed him to have that seriousness, like, I'm going to fast and pray type thing. The integrity to follow through with it.
Right. A lot of good stuff there.
I mean, I know it seems like a rash vow, but we need a more positive spin on the text.
Yeah. And here's the thing. I mean, the fact that God was first, it was going to end well. It's going to end with him in the hall of faith in Hebrews chapter 11. The thing is, especially when we're talking about putting God first, what if you put any other thing first above your family? It's going to be a disaster. But if God's the one thing you can put above your family and everything just works out well.
Yeah, because God's going to take care of you. And God did that with Job.
Right.
Like he lost family, but then he got family back and more so.
Right.
And I mean, no one's going to give up anything for God that God's going to forget or not pay back. I mean, that's right. just how it works. I mean, God is faithful in that regard. And so, pray nobody has to go through with that. Pray we're not making any rash commitments, but pray that we have the strength to follow through on the commitments that we've made and put God in his rightful place. Todd, you got anything you want to add as we close?
No, I think you've covered it all, Stephen.
Again, grateful for your attention tonight and thankful for the opportunity to talk about God. If you haven't been worshiping at a local church and you stumbled across this podcast somehow, we'd love to have you just 1 mile west of downtown Cumming here in the North Georgia Mountains, and a simple group of Christians just trying to get together, study the Bible, and do those things that God wants. So if you come to our church, you may feel like things are going back in time, but I hope they're back in time. I hope they're 2,000 years back in time to the way God set things up, and we can worship him in the way that he intended. Love to have you with us and check things out on our website, www.justchristians.net. Todd, thanks for your time as always, and we'll look forward to worshiping together and talking together soon.
Yep. God bless.